passing time by dating it, a way which is adumbrated in its thrownness into the there. This dating of things in terms of the heavenly body which sheds forth light and warmth, and in terms of its distinctive places in the sky, is a way of assigning time which can be done in our being with one another, under the same sky, and which can be done for every man at any time in the same way, so that within certain limits everyone is proximally agreed upon it. That by which things are thus dated is available environmentally, and yet not restricted to the world of equipment with which one currently concerns oneself. It is rather the case that in the world, the environing nature, the public environment, are always discovered along with it. This public dating, in which everyone assigns himself his time, is one which everyone can reckon on simultaneously. It uses a publicly available measure. This dating reckons with time in the sense of a measuring of time, and such measuring requires something by which time is to be measured, namely a clock. This implies that along with the temporality of Dasein as throne, abandoned to the world and giving itself time, something like a clock is also discovered. That is something ready to hand which in its regular recurrence has become accessible in one's making present awaitingly. The being which has been thrown and is alongside the ready to hand is grounded in temporality. Temporality is the reason for the clock. As the condition for the possibility that a clock is factically necessary, temporality is likewise the condition for its discoverability. For while the course of the sun is encountered along with the discoveredness of entities within the world, it is only by making it present in awaitingly retaining, and by doing so in a way which interprets itself, that dating in terms of what is ready to hand environmentally in a public way is made possible, and is also required. Dasein has its basis in temporality, and the natural clock, which has already been discovered along with Dasein's factical thrownness, furnishes the first motivation for the production and use of clocks, which will be somewhat more handy. It also makes this possible. Indeed, it does this in such a manner that these artificial clocks must be adjusted to that natural one if the time, which is primarily discoverable in the natural clock, is to be made accessible in its turn. Before describing the chief features in the development of time reckoning and the use of clocks in their existential ontological meaning, we must first characterize more completely the time with which we are concerned when we measure it. If the time with which we concern ourselves is really made public only when it gets measured, then if public time is to be accessible in a way which has been phenomenally unveiled, we must have access to it by following up the way in which that which has been dated shows itself when dated in this reckoning manner. When the then, which interprets itself in concernful awaiting, gets dated, this dating includes some such statement as, then, when it dawns, it is time for one's daily work. The time which is interpreted in concern is already understood as a time for something. The current now that so-and-so is as such either appropriate or inappropriate. Not only is the now, and so too any mode of interpreted time, a now that, which is essentially datable, but as such it has essentially at the same time the structure of appropriateness or inappropriateness. Time which has been interpreted has by its very nature the character of the time for something, or the wrong time for something. When concern makes present by awaiting and retaining, time is understood in relation to a for which. And this in turn is ultimately tied up with a for the sake of which, of Dasein's potentiality for being. With this in order to relation, the time which has been made public makes manifest that structure with which we have earlier become acquainted as significance, and which constitutes the worldhood of the world. As the time for something, the time which has been made public has essentially a world character. Hence the time which makes itself public in the temporalizing of temporality is what we designate as world time. And we designate it thus not because it is present at hand as an entity within the world, which it can never be, but because it belongs to the world, zur Welt, in the sense which we have interpreted existential ontologically. In the following pages we must show how the essential relations of the world structure, the in order to, for example, are connected with public time, the then-when, for example, by reason of the ecstatico-horizonal constitution of temporality. Only now, in any case, can the time with which we concern ourselves be completely characterized as to its structure. It is datable, spanned, and public. And as having this structure, it belongs to the world itself. Every now, for instance, which is expressed in a natural, everyday manner, has this kind of structure, and is understood as such, though preconceptually and unthematically, when Dasein concernfully allows itself time. The discloseness of the natural clock belongs to the Dasein which exists as throne and falling, and in this discloseness factical Dasein has at the same time already given a distinctive public character to the time with which it concerns itself. As time reckoning is perfected and the use of clocks becomes more refined, this making public gets enhanced and strengthened. We shall not give here a historiological presentation of the historical evolution of time reckoning and the use of clocks, with all its possible variations. We must rather ask in an existential, ontological way what mode of the temporalizing of Dasein's temporality becomes manifest in the direction which the development of time reckoning and clock using has taken. When this question is answered, there must arise a more primordial understanding of the fact that the measurement of time, and this means also the explicit making public of time as an object of concern, is grounded in the temporality of Dasein, and indeed in a quite definite temporalizing of that temporality. Comparison shows that for the advanced Dasein, the day and the presence of sunlight no longer have such a special function as they have for the primitive Dasein, on which our analysis of natural time reckoning has been based. For the advanced Dasein has the advantage of even being able to turn night into day. Similarly, we no longer need to glance explicitly and immediately at the sun and its position to ascertain the time. The manufacture and use of measuring equipment of one's own permits one to read off the time directly by a clock produced especially for this purpose. The what o'clock is it? Is the what time is it? Because the clock, in the sense of that which makes possible a public way of time reckoning, must be regulated by the natural clock. Even the use of clocks as equipment is based upon Dasein's temporality, which, with the discloseness of the there, first makes possible a dating of the time with which we concern ourselves. This is a fact, even if it is covered up when the time is read off. Our understanding of the natural clock develops with the advancing discovery of nature, and instructs us as to new possibilities for a kind of time measurement which is relatively independent of the day and of any explicit observation of the sky. But in a certain manner, even primitive Dasein makes itself independent of reading off the time directly from the sky, when instead of ascertaining the sun's position, it measures the shadow cast by some entity available at any time. This can happen in the first instance in the simplest form of the ancient peasant's clock. Every man is constantly accompanied by a shadow, and in the shadow the sun is encountered with respect to its changing presence at different places. In the daytime, shadows have different lengths which can be paced off at any time. Even if individuals differ in the lengths of their bodies and feet, the relationship between them remains constant within certain limits of accuracy. Thus, for example, when one is concerned with making an appointment, one designates the time publicly by saying, "When the shadow is so many feet long, then we shall meet yonder." Here, in being with one another within the rather narrow boundaries of an environment which is very close to us, it is tacitly presupposed that the locations at which the shadow gets paced off are at the same latitude. This clock is one which Dasein does not have to carry around with it. In a certain manner, Dasein itself is the clock. The public sundial, in which the line of a shadow is counterposed to the course of the sun and moves along a numbered track, needs no further description. But why is it that, at the position which the shadow occupies on the dial, we always find something like time? Neither the shadow nor the divided track is time itself, nor is the spatial relationship between them. Where then is the time, which we thus read off directly, not only on the sundial, but also on any pocket watch? What does reading off the time signify? Looking at the clock does indeed amount to more than observing the changes in some item of equipment which is ready to hand and following the positions of a pointer. When we use a clock in ascertaining what o'clock it is, we say, whether explicitly or not, it is now such and such an hour and so many minutes. Now is the time for, or there is still time enough, now until. Looking at the clock is based on taking our time and is guided by it. What has already shown itself in the most elementary time reckoning here becomes plainer. When we look at the clock and regulate ourselves according to the time, we are essentially saying now. Here the now has in each case already been understood and interpreted in its full structural content of datability, spannedness, publicness and worldhood. This is so obvious that we take no note of it whatsoever. Still less do we know anything about it explicitly. Saying now, however, is the discursive articulation of a making present, which temporalizes itself in a unity with the retentive awaiting. The dating, which is performed when one uses a clock, turns out to be a distinctive way in which something present at hand is made present. Dating does not simply relate to something present at hand. This kind of relating has itself the character of measuring. Of course, the number which we get by measuring can be read off immediately. But this implies that when a stretch is to be measured, we understand that our standard is, in a way, contained in it. That is, we determine the frequency of its presence in that stretch. Measuring is constituted temporally when a standard which has presence is made present in a stretch which has presence. The idea of a standard implies unchangingness. This means that for everyone, at any time, the standard, in its stability, must be present at hand. When the time with which one concerns oneself is dated by measuring, one interprets it by looking at something present at hand, and making it present, something which would not become accessible as a standard, or as something measured except by our making it present in this distinctive manner. Because the making present of something having presence has a special priority in dating by measuring, the measurement in which one reads off the time by the clock also expresses itself with special emphasis in the now. Thus, when time is measured, it is made public in such a way that it is encountered on each occasion and at any time for everyone as now and now and now. This time, which is universally accessible in clocks, is something that we come across as a present-at-hand multiplicity of nows, so to speak. Though the measuring of time is not directed thematically towards time as such. The temporality of factical being in the world is what primordially makes the disclosure of space possible. And in each case, spatial Dasein has, out of a yonder which has been discovered, allotted itself a here, which is of the character of Dasein. Because of all this, the time with which Dasein concerns itself in its temporality is, as regards its datability, always bound up with some location of that Dasein. Time itself does not get linked to a location, but temporality is the condition for the possibility that dating may be bound up with the spatially local in such a way that this may be binding for everyone as a measure. Time does not first get coupled with space, but the space, which one might suppose to be coupled with it, is encountered only on the basis of the temporality, which concerns itself with time. Inasmuch as both time reckoning and the clock are founded upon the temporality of Dasein, which is constitutive for this entity as historical, it may be shown to what extent, ontologically, the use of clocks is itself historical, and to what extent every clock as such has a history. The time which is made public by our measuring it does not by any means turn into space because we date it in terms of spatial measurement relations. Still less is what is existential ontologically essential in the measuring of time to be sought in the fact that dated time is determined numerically in terms of spatial stretches and in changes in the location of some spatial thing. What is ontologically decisive lies rather in the specific kind of making present, which makes measurement possible. Dating in terms of what is spatially present at hand is so far from a spatializing of time that this supposed spatialization signifies nothing else than that an entity, which is present at hand for everyone in every now, is made present in its own presence. Measuring time is essentially such that it is necessary to say now, but in obtaining the measurement we, as it were, forget what has been measured as such, so that nothing is to be found except a number and a stretch. When Dasein concerns itself with time, then the less time it has to lose, the more precious does that time become, and the handier the clock must be. Not only should we be able to assign the time more precisely, but the very determining of the time should claim as little time as possible, though it must still agree with the ways in which others assign time. Provisionally, it was enough for us to point out the general connection of the use of clocks with that temporality which takes its time. Just as the concrete analysis of astronomical time reckoning, in its full development, belongs to the existential ontological interpretation of how nature is discovered, the foundations of historiological and calendrical chronology can be laid bare only within the orbit of the tasks of analyzing historiological cognition existentially. The measurement of time gives it a marked public character, so that only in this way does what we generally call the time become well known. In concern, everything has its time attributed to it. It has it, and like every entity within the world, it can have it only because, after all, it is in time. That time, wherein entities within the world are encountered, we know as world time. By reason of the extatico-horizontal constitution of the temporality which belongs to it, this has the same transcendence as the world itself. With the disclosedness of the world, world time has been made public, so that every temporally concernful being alongside entities within the world understands these entities circumspectively as encountered in time. The time in which the present at hand is in motion or at rest is not objective, if what we mean by that is the being present at hand in itself of entities encountered within the world. But just as little is time subjective, if by this we understand being present at hand and occurring in a subject. World time is more objective than any possible object because, with the disclosedness of the world, it already becomes objectified in an extatico-horizontal manner as the condition for the possibility of entities within the world. Thus, contrary to Kant's opinion, one comes across world time just as immediately in the physical as in the psychical, and not just roundabout by way of the psychical. Time first shows itself in the sky, precisely where one comes across it when one regulates oneself, naturally according to it, so that time even becomes identified with the sky. World time, moreover, is also more subjective than any possible subject, for it is what first makes possible the being of the factically existing self, that being which, as is now well understood, is the meaning of care. Time is present at hand neither in the subject nor in the object, neither inside nor outside, and it is earlier than any subjectivity or objectivity, because it presents the condition for the very possibility of this earlier. Has it then any being? And if not, is it then a mere phantom, or is it something that has more being, Zionder, than any possible entity? Any investigation which goes further in the direction of questions such as these will come up against the same boundary, which has already set itself up to our provisional discussion of the connection between truth and being. In whatever way these questions may be answered in what follows, or in whatever way they may first of all get primordially formulated, we must first understand that temporality, as extatico-horizontal, temporalizes something like world time, which constitutes a within-timeness of the ready-to-hand and the present-at-hand. But in that case, such entities can never be designated as temporal in the strict sense. Like every entity with a character other than that of Dasein, they are non-temporal. Whether they really occur, arise and pass away, or subsist ideally. If world time thus belongs to the temporalizing of temporality, then it can neither be volatilized subjectivistically nor reified by a vicious objectification, These two possibilities can be avoided with a clear insight, not just by wavering insecurely between them. Only if we can understand how everyday Dasein conceives of time theoretically in terms of an understanding of time in the way which is closest to it, and if we can also understand to what extent this conception of time and the prevalence of this concept obstruct the possibility of our understanding in terms of primordial time, what is meant by this conception, that is, the possibility of understanding it as temporality. The everyday concern which gives itself time finds the time in those entities within the world which are encountered in time. So, if we are to cast any light on the genesis of the ordinary conception of time, we must take within timeness as our point of departure. Section 81. Within timeness and the genesis of the ordinary conception of time. How does something like time first show itself for everyday circumspective concern? In what kind of concernful equipment-using dealings does it become explicitly accessible? If it has been made public with the disclosedness of the world, if it has always been already a matter of concern with the discoveredness of entities within the world, a discoveredness which belongs to the world's disclosedness, and if it has been a matter of such concern insofar as Dasein calculates time in reckoning with itself, then the kind of behavior in which one explicitly regulates oneself according to time lies in the use of clocks. The existential temporal meaning of this turns out to be a making present of the traveling pointer. By following the positions of the pointer in a way which makes present, one counts them. This making present temporalizes itself in the ecstatical unity of a retention which awaits. To retain the on that former occasion and to retain it by making it present signifies that in saying now one is open for the horizon of the earlier, that is of the now no longer. To await the then by making it present means that in saying now one is open for the horizon of the later, that is of the now not yet. Time is what shows itself in such a making present. How, then, are we to define the time which is manifest within the horizon of the circumspective concernful clock-using in which one takes one's time? This time is that which is counted, and which shows itself when one follows the travelling pointer. Counting and making present in such a way that this making present temporalizes itself in an ecstatical unity with the retaining and awaiting, which are horizonally open according to the earlier and later. This, however, is nothing else than an existential ontological interpretation of Aristotle's definition of time. For this is time, that which is counted in the movement which we encounter within the horizon of the earlier and later. This definition may seem strange at first glance, but if one defines the existential ontological horizon from which Aristotle has taken it, one sees that it is as obvious as it first seems strange, and has been genuinely derived. The source of the time which is thus manifest does not become a problem for Aristotle. His interpretation of time moves rather in the direction of the natural way of understanding being. Yet because this very understanding and the being which is thus understood have in principle been made a problem for the investigation which lies before us, it is only after we have found a solution for the question of being that the Aristotelian analysis of time can be interpreted thematically in such a way that it may indeed gain some signification in principle. If the formulation of this question in ancient ontology, with all its critical limitations, is to be appropriated in a positive manner. Ever since Aristotle, all discussions of the concept of time have clung in principle to the Aristotelian definitions. That is, in taking time as their theme, they have taken it as it shows itself in circumspective concern. Time is what is counted, that is to say, it is what is expressed and what we have in view, even if, unthematically, when the travelling pointer or the shadow is made present. When one makes present that which is moved in its movement, one says, now here, and so on. The nows are what get counted. And these show themselves in every now, as nows which will forthwith be no longer now, and nows which have just been not yet now. The world time which is cited in this manner in the use of clocks we call the now time, Jetztzeit. When the concern which gives itself time reckons with time, the more naturally it does so, the less it dwells at the express time as such. On the contrary, it is lost in the equipment with which it concerns itself, which in each case has a time of its own. When concern determines the time and assigns it, the more naturally it does so. That is, the less it is directed towards treating time as such thematically. All the more does the being which is alongside the object of concern, the being which falls as it makes present, say unhesitatingly, whether or not anything is uttered, now or then, or on that former occasion. Thus, for the ordinary understanding of time, time shows itself as a sequence of nows, which are constantly present at hand, simultaneously passing away and coming along. Time is understood as a succession, as a flowing stream of nows, as the course of time. What is implied by such an interpretation of the world time with which we concern ourselves? We get the answer if we go back to the full essential structure of world time and compare this with that with which the ordinary understanding of time is acquainted. We have exhibited datability as the first essential item in the time with which we concern ourselves. This is grounded in the ecstatical constitution of temporality. The now is essentially a now that. The datable now, which is understood in concern, even if we cannot grasp it as such, is in each case one which is either appropriate or inappropriate. Significance belongs to the structure of the now. We have accordingly called the time with which we concern ourselves world time. In the ordinary interpretations of time as a sequence of nows, both datability and significance are missing. These two structures are not permitted to come to the fore when time is characterized as a pure succession. The ordinary interpretation of time covers them up. When these are covered up, the ecstatico-horizonal constitution of temporality, in which the datability and the significance of the now are grounded, gets leveled off. The nows get shorn of these relations, as it were. And as thus shorn, they simply range themselves along after one another, so as to make up the succession. It is no accident that world time thus gets leveled off and covered up by the way time is ordinarily understood. But just because the everyday interpretation of time maintains itself by looking solely in the direction of concernful common sense, and understands only what shows itself within the common sense horizon, these structures must escape it. That which gets counted when one measures time concernfully, the now, gets co-understood in one's concern with the present at hand and the ready to hand. Now, so far as this concern with time comes back to the time itself, which has been co-understood, and insofar as it considers that time, it sees the nows, which indeed are also somehow there, within the horizon of that understanding of being by which this concern is itself constantly guided. Thus, the nows are in a certain manner co-present at hand. That is, entities are encountered, and so too is the now. Although it is not said explicitly that the nows are present at hand in the same way as things, they still get seen ontologically within the horizon of the idea of presence at hand. The nows pass away, and those which have passed away make up the past. The nows come along, and those which are coming along define the future. The ordinary interpretation of world time as now time never avails itself of the horizon by which such things as world, significance, and datability can be made accessible. These structures necessarily remain covered up, all the more so because this covering up is reinforced by the way in which the ordinary interpretation develops its characterization of time conceptually. The sequence of nows is taken as something that is somehow present at hand, for it even moves into time. We say, in every now is now. In every now it is already vanishing. In every now, the now is now, and therefore it constantly has presence as something self-same, even though in every now another may be vanishing as it comes along. Yet as this thing which changes, it simultaneously shows its own constant presence. Thus even Plato, who directed his glance in this manner at time as a sequence of nows, arising and passing away, had to call time the image of eternity. But he decided to make a kind of moving image of the eternal. And while setting the heaven in order, he made an eternal image, moving according to number an image of that eternity which abides in oneness. It is to this image that we have given the name of time. The sequence of nows is uninterrupted and has no gaps. No matter how far we proceed in dividing up the now, it is always now. The continuity of time is seen within the horizon of something which is indissolubly present at hand. When one takes one's ontological orientation from something that is constantly present at hand, one either looks for the problem of the continuity of time or one leaves this impasse alone. In either case, the specific structure of world time must remain covered up. Together with datability, which has an ecstatical foundation, it has been spanned. The spannedness of time is not to be understood in terms of the horizontal stretching along of the ecstatical unity of that temporality which has made itself public in one's concern with time. The fact that in every now, no matter how momentary, it is in each case already now, must be conceived in terms of something which is earlier still and from which every now stems. That is to say, it must be conceived in terms of the ecstatical stretching along of that temporality which is alien to any continuity of something present at hand, but which, for its part, presents the condition for the possibility of access to anything continuous that is present at hand. The principal thesis of the ordinary way of interpreting time, namely that time is infinite, makes manifest most impressively the way in which world time, and accordingly temporality in general, have been levelled off and covered up by such an interpretation. It is held that time presents itself proximally as an uninterrupted sequence of nows. Every now, moreover, is already either a just now or a forthwith. If, in characterizing time, we stick primarily and exclusively to such a sequence, then in principle neither beginning nor end can be found in it. Every last now, as now, is always already a forthwith, that is, no longer, ein sofort nicht mehr. Thus it is time in the sense of the no longer now, in the sense of the past. Every first now is a just now, that is, not yet, ein soeben noch nicht. Thus it is time in the sense of the not yet now, in the sense of the future. Hence time is endless on both sides. This thesis becomes possible only on the basis of an orientation towards a free-floating in itself of a course of nows which is present at hand, an orientation in which the full phenomenon of the now has been covered up with regard to its datability, its worldhood, its spannedness, and its character of having a location of the same kind as Dasein's, so that it has dwindled to an unrecognizable fragment. If one directs one's glance towards being present at hand and not being present at hand, and thus thinks the sequence of nows through to the end, then an end can never be found. In this way of thinking time through to the end, one must always think more time. From this one infers that time is infinite. But wherein are grounded this levelling off of world time and this covering up of temporality? In the being of Dasein itself, which we have, in a preparatory manner, interpreted as care. Thrown and falling, Dasein is proximally and for the most part lost in that with which it concerns itself. In this lostness, however, Dasein's fleeing in the face of that authentic existence, which has been characterized as anticipatory resoluteness, has made itself known, and this is a fleeing which covers up. In this concernful fleeing lies a fleeing in the face of death, that is, a looking away from the end of being in the world. This looking away from it is in itself a mode of that being towards the end which is ecstatically futural. The inauthentic temporality of everyday Dasein, as it falls, must, as such a looking away from finitude, fail to recognize authentic futurity and therewith temporality in general. And if indeed the way in which Dasein is ordinarily understood is guided by the they, only so can the self-forgetful representation of the infinity of public time be strengthened. The they never dies because it cannot die, for death is in each case mine, and only in anticipatory resoluteness does it get authentically understood in an existentiel manner. Nevertheless, the they, which never dies and which misunderstands being towards the end, gives a characteristic interpretation to fleeing in the face of death. To the very end, it always has more time. Here, a way of having time in the sense that one can lose it makes itself known. Right now, this, then that, and that is barely over when. Here, it is not as if the finitude of time were getting understood. Quite the contrary, for concern sets out to snatch as much as possible from the time which still keeps coming and goes on. Publicly, time is something which everyone takes and can take. In the everyday way in which we are with one another, the levelled-off sequence of nows remains completely unrecognizable as regards its origin in the temporality of the individual Dasein. How is time, in its course, to be touched even the least bit when a man who has been present at hand in time no longer exists? Time goes on just as indeed it already was when a man came into life. The only time one knows is the public time which has been levelled off and which belongs to everyone, and that means to nobody. But just as he who flees in the face of death is pursued by it, even as he evades it, and just as in turning away from it he must see it nonetheless, even the innocuous, infinite sequence of nows, which simply runs its course, imposes itself on Dasein in a remarkably enigmatical way. Why do we say that time passes away, when we do not say with just as much emphasis that it arises? Yet with regard to the pure sequence of nows, we have as much right to say one as the other. When Dasein talks of time's passing away, it understands, in the end, more of time than it wants to admit. That is to say, the temporality in which world-time temporalizes itself has not been completely closed off, no matter how much it may get covered up. Our talk about time's passing away gives expression to this experience. Time does not let itself be halted. This experience, in turn, is possible only because the halting of time is something that we want. Herein lies an inauthentic awaiting of moments, an awaiting in which these are already forgotten as they glide by. The awaiting of inauthentic existence, the awaiting which forgets as it makes present, is the condition for the possibility of the ordinary experience of time's passing away. Because Dasein is futural in the ahead of itself, it must, in awaiting, understand the sequence of nows as one which glides by as it passes away. Dasein knows fugitive time in terms of its fugitive knowledge about its death. In the kind of talk which emphasizes time's passing away, the finite futurity of Dasein's temporality is publicly reflected. And because, even in talk about time's passing away, death can remain covered up, time shows itself as a passing away in itself. But even in this pure sequence of nows which passes away in itself, primordial time still manifests itself throughout all this levelling off and covering up. In the ordinary interpretation, the stream of time is defined as an irreversible succession. Why cannot time be reversed? Especially if one looks exclusively at the stream of nows, it is incomprehensible in itself why this sequence should not present itself in the reverse direction. The impossibility of this reversal has its basis in the way public time originates in temporality, the temporalizing of which is primarily futural and goes to its end ecstatically, in such a way that it is already towards its end. The ordinary way of characterizing time as an endless, irreversible sequence of nows, which passes away, arises from the temporality of falling Dasein. The ordinary representation of time has its natural justification. It belongs to Dasein's average kind of being, and to that understanding of being which proximally prevails. Thus, proximally, and for the most part, even history gets understood publicly as happening within time. This interpretation of time loses its exclusive and preeminent justification only if it claims to convey the true conception of time and to be able to prescribe the sole possible horizon within which time is to be interpreted. On the contrary, it has emerged that why and how world time belongs to Dasein's temporality is intelligible only in terms of that temporality and its temporalizing. From temporality, the full structure of world time has been drawn, and only the interpretation of this structure gives us the clue for seeing at all that in the ordinary conception of time, something has been covered up, and for estimating how much the ecstatico-horizonal constitution of temporality has been leveled off. This orientation by Dasein's temporality indeed makes it possible to exhibit the origin and the factical necessity of this leveling off and covering up, and at the same time to test the arguments for the ordinary theses about time. On the other hand, within the horizon of the way time is ordinarily understood, temporality is inaccessible in the reverse direction. Not only must the now time be oriented primarily by temporality in the order of possible interpretation, but it temporalizes itself only in the inauthentic temporality of Dasein. So if one has regard for the way the now time is derived from temporality, one is justified in considering temporality as the time which is primordial. Ecstatico-horizonal temporality temporalizes itself primarily in terms of the future. In the way time is ordinarily understood, however, the basic phenomenon of time is seen in the now, and indeed in that pure now, which has been shorn in its full structure, that which they call the present. One can gather from this that there is in principle no prospect that, in terms of this kind of now, one can clarify the ecstatico-horizonal phenomenon of the moment of vision, which belongs to temporality, or even that one can derive it thus. Correspondingly, the future, as ecstatically understood, the datable and significant, then does not coincide with the ordinary conception of the future, in the sense of a pure now which has not yet come along but is only coming along. And the concept of the past in the sense of the pure now which has passed away is just as far from coinciding with the ecstatical having been, the datable and significant on a former occasion. The now is not pregnant with the not yet now, but the present arises from the future in the primordial ecstatical unity of the temporalizing of temporality. Although, proximally and for the most part, the ordinary experience of time is one that knows only world time, it always gives it a distinctive relationship to soul and spirit, even if this is still a far cry from a philosophical inquiry oriented explicitly and primarily towards the subject. As evidence for this, two characteristic passages will suffice. Aristotle says, "But if nothing other than the soul or the soul's mind were naturally equipped for numbering, then if there were no soul, time would be impossible." And St. Augustine writes, "Hence it seemed to me that time is nothing else than an extendedness. But of what sort of thing it is an extendedness, I do not know. And it would be surprising if it were not an extendedness of the soul itself." Thus, in principle, even the interpretation of Dasein as temporality does not lie beyond the horizon of the ordinary conception of time. And Hegel has made an explicit attempt to set forth the way in which time, as ordinarily understood, is connected with spirit. In Kant, on the other hand, while time is indeed subjective, it stands beside the I think and is not bound up with it. The grounds which Hegel has explicitly provided for the connection between time and spirit are well suited to elucidate indirectly the foregoing interpretation of Dasein as temporality and our exhibition of temporality as the source of world time. Section 82. A comparison of the existential ontological connection of temporality, Dasein and world time, with Hegel's way of taking the relation between time and spirit. History, which is essentially the history of spirit, runs its course in time. Thus, the development of history falls into time. Hegel is not satisfied, however, with averring that the within-timeness of spirit is a fact, but seeks to understand how it is possible for spirit to fall into time, which is the non-sensuous sensuous. Time must be able, as it were, to take in spirit, and spirit in turn must be akin to time and its essence, Accordingly, two points come up for discussion. 1. How does Hegel define the essence of time? 2. What belongs to the essence of spirit, which makes it possible for it to fall into time? Our answer to these questions will serve merely to elucidate our interpretation of Dasein as temporality, and to do so by way of a comparison. We shall make no claim to give even a relatively full treatment of the allied problems in Hegel, especially since criticizing him will not help us, because Hegel's conception of time presents the most radical way in which the ordinary understanding of time has been given form conceptually, and one which has received too little attention. A comparison of this conception with the idea of temporality which we have expounded is one that especially suggests itself. A. Hegel's conception of time. When a philosophical interpretation of time is carried out, it gets a locus in a system. This locus may be considered as criterial for the basic way of treating time by which such an interpretation is guided. In the physics of Aristotle, that is, in the context of an ontology of nature, the ordinary way of understanding time has received its first thematically detailed traditional interpretation. Time, location, and movement stand together. True to tradition, Hegel's analysis of time has its locus in the second part of his Encyclopedia of the Philosophical Sciences, which is entitled Philosophy of Nature. The first portion of this treats of mechanics, and of this the first division is devoted to the discussion of space and time. He calls these the abstract outside of one another. Though Hegel puts space and time together, this does not happen simply because he has arranged them superficially one after the other. Space and time also. Philosophy combats such an also. The transition from space to time does not signify that these are treated in adjoining paragraphs. Rather, it is space itself that makes the transition. Space is time. That is, time is the truth of space. If space is thought dialectically in that which it is, then according to Hegel, this being of space unveils itself as time. How must space be thought? Space is the unmediated indifference of nature's being outside of itself. This is a way of saying that space is the abstract multiplicity, Vielheit, of the points which are differentiable in it. Space is not interrupted by these, but neither does it arise from them by way of joining them together. Though it is differentiated by differentiable points which are space themselves, space remains, for its part, without any differences. The differences themselves are of the same character as that which they differentiate. Nevertheless, the point, insofar as it differentiates anything in space, is the negation of space, though in such a manner that, as this negation, it itself remains in space. A point is space, after all. The point does not lift itself out of space as if it were something of another character. Space is the outside of one another, of the multiplicity of points, Punktmannigfaltigkeit, and it is without any differences. But it is not as if space were a point. Space is rather, as Hegel says, punctuality, Punktualität. This is the basis for the sentence in which Hegel thinks of space in its truth, that is, as time. Negativity, which relates itself as point to space, and which develops in space its determinations as line and surface, is, however, just as much for itself in the sphere of being outside itself, and so are its determinations therein. Though while it is positing as in the sphere of being outside of itself, it appears indifferent as regards the things that are tranquilly side by side. As thus posited for itself, it is time. If space gets represented, that is, if it gets intuited immediately in the indifferent subsistence of its differences, then the negations are, as it were, simply given. But by such a representation, space does not get grasped in its being. Only in thinking is it possible for this to be done. In thinking, as the synthesis which has gone through thesis and antithesis and transmuted them. Only if the negations do not simply remain subsisting in their indifference but get transmuted, that is, only if they themselves get negated, does space get thought and thus grasped in its being. In the negation of the negation, that is, of punctuality, the point posits itself for itself and thus emerges from the indifference of subsisting. As that which is posited for itself, it differentiates itself from this one and from that one. It is no longer this and not yet that. In positing itself for itself, it posits the succession in which it stands, the sphere of being outside of itself, which is by now the sphere of the negated negation. When punctuality as indifference gets transmuted, this signifies that it no longer remains lying in the paralyzed tranquility of space. The point gives itself airs before all the other points. According to Hegel, this negation of the negation as punctuality is time. If this discussion has any demonstrable meaning, it can mean nothing else than that the positing of itself, for itself, of every point is a now here, and so on. Every point is posited for itself as a now point. In time, the point thus has actuality. That through which each point, as this one here, can posit itself for itself, is in each case a now. The now is the condition for the possibility of the point's positing itself for itself. This possibility condition makes up the being of the point, and being is the same as having been thought. Thus in each case, the pure thinking of punctuality, that is, of space, thinks the now, and the being outside of itself of the now. Because of this, space is time. How is time itself defined? Time, as the negative unity of being outside of itself, is likewise something simply abstract, ideal. It is that being which, in that it is not, and which, in that it is not, is. It is intuited becoming. This means that those differences, which to be sure are simply momentary, transmuting themselves immediately, are defined as external, yet as external to themselves. For this interpretation, time reveals itself as intuited becoming. According to Hegel, this signifies a transition from being to nothing, or from nothing to being. Becoming is both arising and passing away. Either being makes the transition or not being does so. What does this mean with regard to time? The being of time is the now. Every now, however, either now is no longer or now is not yet. So it can be taken also as not being. Time is intuited becoming. That is to say, it is the transition which does not get thought, but which simply tenders itself in the sequence of nows. If the essence of time is defined as intuited becoming, then it becomes manifest that time is primarily understood in terms of the now, and indeed in the very manner in which one comes across such a now in pure intuition. No detailed discussion is needed to make plain that in Hegel's interpretation of time, he is moving wholly in the direction of the way time is ordinarily understood. When he characterizes time in terms of the now, this presupposes that in its full structure the now remains leveled off and covered up, so that it can be intuited as something present at hand, though present at hand only ideally. That Hegel interprets time in terms of this primary orientation by the now, which has been leveled off, is evidenced by the following sentences. The now is monstrously privileged. It is nothing but the individual now. But in giving itself airs, this thing which is so exclusive has already been dissolved, diffused, and pulverized, even while I am expressing it. In nature, moreover, where time is now, no stable, bestehend difference between these dimensions, past and future, ever comes about. Thus, in a positive sense, one can say of time that only the present is. The before and after are not. But the concrete present is the result of the past, and is pregnant with the future. Thus the true present is eternity. If Hegel calls time intuited becoming, then neither arising nor passing away has any priority in time. Nevertheless, on occasion he characterizes time as the abstraction of consuming, Abstraktion des Verzehrens. The most radical formula for the way in which time is ordinarily experienced and interpreted. On the other hand, when Hegel really defines time, he is consistent enough to grant no such priority to consuming and passing away as that which the everyday way of experiencing time rightly adheres to. For Hegel can no more provide dialectical grounds for such a priority than he can for the circumstance, which he has introduced as self-evident, that the now turns up precisely in the way the point posits itself, for itself. So even when he characterizes time as becoming, Hegel understands this becoming in an abstract sense, which goes well beyond the representation of the stream of time. Thus, the most appropriate expression which the Hegelian treatment of time receives lies in his defining it as the negation of a negation, that is, of punctuality. Here, the sequence of nous has been formalized in the most extreme sense and leveled off in such a way that one can hardly go any farther. Only from the standpoint of this formal dialectical conception of time can Hegel produce any connection between time and spirit. B. Hegel's interpretation of the connection between time and spirit. If Hegel can say that when spirit gets actualized, it accords with it to fall into time, with time defined as a negation of a negation, how has spirit itself been understood? The essence of spirit is the concept. By this, Hegel understands not the universal, which is intuited in a genus as the form of something thought, but rather the form of the very thinking which thinks itself, the conceiving of oneself as the grasping of the not I. Inasmuch as the grasping of the not I presents a differentiation, there lies in the pure concept, as the grasping of this differentiation, a differentiation of the difference. Thus Hegel can define the essence of the spirit formally and apophantically as the negation of a negation. This absolute negativity gives a logically formalized interpretation of Descartes' cogito me cogitare rem, wherein he sees the essence of the conscientia. The concept is accordingly a self-conceiving way in which the self has been conceived. As thus conceived, the self is authentically as it can be, that is, free. The I is the pure concept itself, which as concept has come into Dasein. The I, however, is this initially pure unity, which relates itself to itself, not immediately, but in that it abstracts from all determinateness and content, and goes back to the freedom of its unrestricted self-equality. Thus the I is universality, but it is individuality just as immediately. This negating of the negation is both that which is absolutely restless in the spirit, and also its self-manifestation, which belongs to its essence. The progression of the spirit, which actualizes itself in history, carries with it a principle of exclusion. In this exclusion, however, that which is excluded does not get detached from the spirit. It gets surmounted. The kind of making itself free which overcomes and at the same time tolerates is characteristic of the freedom of the spirit. Thus, progress never signifies a merely quantitative more, but is essentially qualitative and indeed has the quality of spirit. Progression is done knowingly and knows itself in its goal. In every step of its progress, spirit has to overcome itself as the truly malignant obstacle to that goal. In its development, spirit aims to reach its own concept. The development itself is a hard, unending battle against itself. Because the restlessness with which spirit develops in bringing itself to its concept is the negation of a negation, it accords with spirit, as it actualizes itself, to fall into time, as the immediate negation of a negation. For time is the concept itself, which is there, da ist, and which represents itself to the consciousness as an empty intuition. Because of this, spirit necessarily appears in time, and it appears in time as long as it does not grasp its pure concept, that is, as long as time is not annulled by it. Time is the pure self-external, intuited, not grasped by the self, the concept which is merely intuited. Thus, by its very essence, spirit necessarily appears in time. World history is therefore, above all, the interpretation of spirit in time, just as in space the idea interprets itself as nature. The exclusion which belongs to the movement of development harbours in itself a relationship to not being. This is time understood in terms of the now, which gives itself airs. Time is abstract negativity, as intuited becoming. It is the differentiated self-differentiation which one comes across immediately. It is the concept which is there, daseinende. But this means present at hand. As something present at hand and thus external to spirit, time has no power over the concept, but the concept is rather the power of time. By going back to the self-sameness of the formal structure which both spirit and time possess as the negation of a negation, Hegel shows how it is possible for spirit to be actualized historically in time. Spirit and time get disposed of with the very emptiest of formal ontological and formal apophantical abstractions, and this makes it possible to produce a kinship between them. But because time simultaneously gets conceived in the sense of a world time, which has been utterly leveled off, so that its origin remains completely concealed, it simply gets contrasted with spirit, contrasted as something that is present at hand. Because of this, spirit must, first of all, fall into time. It remains obscure what indeed is signified ontologically by this falling or by the actualizing of a spirit, which has power over time and really is Seienden outside of it. Just as Hegel casts little light on the source of the time which has thus been leveled off, he leaves totally unexamined the question of whether the way in which spirit is essentially constituted as the negating of a negation is possible in any other manner than on the basis of primordial temporality. We cannot as yet discuss whether Hegel's interpretation of time and spirit and the connection between them is correct and rests on foundations which are ontologically primordial. But the very fact that a formal dialectical construction of this connection can be ventured at all makes manifest that these are primordially akin. Hegel's construction was prompted by his arduous struggle to conceive the concretion of the spirit. He makes this known in the following sentence from the concluding chapter of his Phenomenology of the Spirit. Thus time appears as the very fate and necessity which spirit has when it is not in itself complete. The necessity of its giving self-consciousness a richer share in consciousness, of its setting in motion the immediacy of the in itself, the form in which substance is in consciousness, or conversely of its realizing and making manifest the in itself taken as the inward, and this is what first is inward, that is, of vindicating it for its certainty of itself. Our existential analytic of Dasein, on the contrary, starts with the concretion of factically thrown existence itself, in order to unveil temporality as that which primordially makes such existence possible. Spirit does not first fall into time, but it exists as the primordial temporalizing of temporality. Temporality temporalizes world time, within the horizon of which history can appear, as historizing within time. Spirit does not fall into time, but factical existence falls as falling from primordial, authentic temporality. This falling, fallen, however, has itself its existential possibility in a mode of its temporalizing, a mode which belongs to temporality. Section 83. The existential temporal analytic of Dasein and the question of fundamental ontology as to the meaning of being in general. In our considerations hitherto, our task has been to interpret the primordial whole of factical Dasein with regard to its possibilities of authentic and inauthentic existing, and to do so in an existential ontological manner in terms of its very basis. Temporality has manifested itself as this basis, and accordingly as the meaning of the being of care. So that which our preparatory existential analytic of Dasein contributed before temporality was laid bare has now been taken back into temporality as the primordial structure of Dasein's totality of being. in terms of the possible ways in which primordial time can temporalize itself, we have provided the grounds for those structures which were just pointed out in our earlier treatment. Nevertheless, our way of exhibiting the constitution of Dasein's being remains only one way which we may take. Our aim is to work out the question of being in general. The thematic analysis of existence, however, first needs the light of the idea of being in general, which must be clarified beforehand. This holds particularly if we adhere to the principle which we expressed in our introduction, as one by which any philosophical investigation may be gauged, that philosophy is universal phenomenological ontology, and takes its departure from the hermeneutic of Dasein, which, as an analytic of existence, has made fast the guiding line for all philosophical inquiry at the point where it arises and to which it returns. This thesis, of course, is to be regarded not as a dogma, but rather as a formulation of a problem of principle, which still remains veiled. Can one provide ontological grounds for ontology, or does it also require an ontical foundation? And which entity must take over the function of providing this foundation? The distinction between the being of existing Dasein and the being of entities such as reality, which do not have the character of Dasein, may appear very illuminating. But it is still only the point of departure for the ontological problematic. It is nothing with which philosophy may tranquillize itself. It has long been known that ancient ontology works with thing concepts, and that there is a danger of reifying consciousness. But what does this reifying signify? Where does it arise? Why does being get conceived proximally in terms of the present at hand, and not in terms of the ready to hand, which indeed lies closer to us? Why does this reifying always keep coming back to exercise its dominion? What positive structure does the being of consciousness have, if reification remains inappropriate to it? Is the distinction between consciousness and thing sufficient for tackling the ontological problematic in a primordial manner? Do the answers to these questions lie along our way? And can we even seek the answer as long as the question of the meaning of being remains unformulated and unclarified? One can never carry on researches into the source and the possibility of the idea of being in general simply by means of the abstractions of formal logic, that is, without any secure horizon for question and answer. One must seek a way of casting light on the fundamental question of ontology, and this is the way one must go. Whether this is the only way or even the right one at all can be decided only after one has gone along it. The conflict as to the interpretation of being cannot be allayed because it has not yet been enkindled. And in the end, this is not the kind of conflict one can bluster into. It is of the kind which cannot get enkindled unless preparations are made for it. Towards this alone, the foregoing investigation is on the way. And where does this investigation stand? Something like being has been disclosed in the understanding of being which belongs to existent Dasein as a way in which it understands. Being has been disclosed in a preliminary way, though non-conceptually. And this makes it possible for Dasein as existent being in the world to comport itself towards entities, towards those which it encounters within the world, as well as towards itself as existent. How is this disclosive understanding of being at all possible for Dasein? Can this question be answered by going back to the primordial constitution of being, of that Dasein by which being is understood? The existential ontological constitution of Dasein's totality is grounded in temporality. Hence the ecstatical projection of being must be made possible by some primordial way in which ecstatical temporality temporalizes. How is this mode of the temporalizing of temporality to be interpreted? Is there a way which leads from primordial time to the meaning of being? Does time itself manifest itself as the horizon of being? Being and Time by Martin Heidegger was read by Martin Swain for Ukemi Audiobooks. For full details of Ukemi recordings, go to ukemiaudiobooks.com.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.